Breathe life into your own backyard this spring with FastGrowingTrees.com. From shade trees to fresh fruit to privacy hedge plants, let FastGrowingTrees.com help you plant your dream garden with their expert advice and fast, reliable shipping. FastGrowingTrees.com's plant experts curate thousands of easy-to-grow plants, shrubs, and tree varieties for your unique climate. And they understand that sometimes it's hard to know which plants will do best. No problem. With FastGrowingTrees.com, you get customized recommendations based on your specific needs, and they're always available to help keep your plants growing healthy through every season. Their website is easy to use, and the shipping's fast. With FastGrowingTrees' 30-day Alive and Thrive Guarantee, you know everything will look great fresh out of the box. So join over 1.5 million happy Fast Growing Trees customers. Visit FastGrowingTrees.com/Dana now and get 15% off your entire order. Get 15% off at FastGrowingTrees.com/Dana. That's FastGrowingTrees.com/Dana.
Again, without confirming the validity of the documents, this is information that has no business in the public domain. It has no business, if you don't mind me saying, on the pages of front pages of newspapers or on television. It is not intended for public consumption, and it should not be out there.
Well, so John Kirby, that was kind of weird. I don't want you to report on any of these things. Please do not pay attention to them, because I don't want you to. It's bad. I don't know if that's going to, well, because no one's listening. No one's listening to that. Welcome to the show. Top of this first hour here on this Tuesday, your hostess, Dana Lash, with you. And we're going to get into all of the latest with that, because some of what we've learned from the leaked documents. Can I just add, I'm always shocked whenever like there's leaked documents or anything of that nature, and we see a little insight into the spying apparatus that the United States has, and everyone acts like they're so shocked that we spy. Yes, we spy. Everybody spies. There are spies. They exist. I mean, I don't know why this is like so shocking to people. I mean, some of the stuff I'm like, yeah, so we had a spy here. Well, how could you have spies, you know, with allies? Because we do. That's just how it is with every nation does it. But when the United States does it, oh my gosh, I'm just tired of it. So we're gonna jump into some of that. We also have the latest updates on Louisville, because they had a press conference just a little earlier sharing some of the latest detail. But this, we also have wokery. Oh, do I have wokery for you? And China. And then self-defense. Let's just start. If you get the newsletter that I send out to all of the subscribers. Actually, yeah, I mean, if you go and subscribe, you get the prep email. But then I had a piece that I have a third piece that I'm working on. And I have this, I kept like, you know, going back and forth and trying to, I was going to send this one piece that I sent out as two separate pieces, and I combined them and made them one thing. And then I have a third piece out about third piece coming out later about self-defense, particularly going through the Daniel Perry case. So we're going to talk about that as well. All right. So first and foremost, though, so this situation with the leaked information, why are we leaking stuff? How is it? And Minecraft?
Yeah.
On a Minecraft server?
Yep.
I mean, it was Discord, and it started on Minecraft. You know, I thought that game was also innocent, you know, and you just go and you craft, you fight like zombies basically, and, you know, Endermen and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I've learned a lot about geology from Minecraft, I got to be honest with you, but it's kind of stunning, these Pentagon papers, the Pentagon documents, that they came out on a Minecraft forum. And apparently a Discord server, and it was on 4chan and all of this stuff. And there were 100, they weren't the actual PDFs of documents. They were like photographs of documents. There was like 100 or so images of them, all marked with top secret, indicating that these are top secret things. Literally, the beginning of March, they appeared on a server, that Discord message board for fans of Minecraft. It's like all y'all's grandkids and your kids were up there with some leaked. I mean, that's just, I mean, I was, I keep going back to that because out of all the places, Minecraft, right? On a Discord server, Discord message board for Minecraft. I know I'm saying that a lot. I'm still not, I can't wrap my head around it. Is this a, I mean, it's Minecraft. You guys know what Minecraft is? You don't know what Minecraft is. That's your kids or grandkids. It's like the safest, most wholesome game you could play, isn't it? You literally chop down trees and you make your little house and you beekeep and you fight zombies and endermen that come from.
Kill sheep and cows.
Yeah, true. You can do all that. Get some bacon and stuff. I mean, it's like it's virtual farming, but it's less annoying because you don't tell everybody about it like Farmville, right? And you actually can fight monsters and stuff. So that's in giant spiders. That's another thing. I hate those things. Anyway, and you build your own things. People love the freedom of it. Total open world. And you deal with the villagers, the NPCs that only talk in grunts. Anyway, I'm just shocked. I mean, it came up on a Minecraft server. I can't stop saying it because it shocks me. What does that say? I mean, why there? Out of all the places to appear, why a Minecraft server? Or a Discord server for a Minecraft, you know, board? So, Bellingcat, which is an investigative website, the consortium of a whole bunch of foreign policy and defense people, they were saying that a lot of the images had been deleted, but of course, you know, the internet never ever forgets. And so they had said that they also appeared, apparently some of them were on a Telegraph platform by pro-Kremlin commentators. One of the images had been altered to lower the estimate of Russian casualties and inflate Ukrainian losses. And then it's the one that the New York Times wrote, and that's the one that ended up, that's the big story that ended up breaking the New York Times piece on this. There were a lot of, I mean, this is, there's a lot of stuff that's coming out of this. This online leak, they said that there are clues that are giving them some insight as to how it happened and where. So they're investigating. And it's all related to the conflict in Ukraine, U.S. global intel operations. And it discloses some of the weakness in the Ukrainian air defense, which we kind of knew. Do you really need that leaked to know that? Do you really need that leaked? I mean, they were begging people for jets. Are you shocked that they have like some weakness? And I mean, seriously, some of the stuff is so obvious. Why are people freaking out? Yes, it's a big leak. I don't want things leaked. You just gave me a baleful look. Why? Why did you look at me like
it,
that?
I just dropped it in Slack. If you notice, the information that was put out on that server was then, you know, gleaned by the Russian media.
Oh, yeah.
And the Russian media changed the amount of deaths on the side of Russia.
Yeah, I just said that. They'd altered them. They altered the stuff.
Yeah, I was just giving you that look like propaganda still healthy in Russia.
Oh, well, yeah. But, I mean, is it, you know, I mean, no one believes that the Russian numbers, Russian fatalities are lower than what they are. I'm surprised their whole military isn't gone at this point. And then you have that guy with the Wagner group. I mean, it's like watching a bunch of wily coyotes with no redeeming value go out and like get thwarted by the Roadrunner every single time. It's something to behold for sure. I'm sure that their entire strategy is going to be taught in war colleges across the world of what not to do. Now, that being said, they said that they had the weaknesses on Ukrainian air defense, information methods used to get stuff from Russian military. Now, the one thing that I do, that I am angry about is that, let me put it like this. We pay a lot in taxes. It's tax month. It's the month where I hate everything. And I don't just pay my fair share. I pay the fair share of all the people bitching about fair shares. And I just can't even talk about it. I'm going to get mad and throw something. So the theft of our money, in part, goes towards what? Supposed to. Our defense. Correct? Our nation's defense. Now, there are certain things that I expect in return for the theft of my money, since we're going to pretend that this is some sort of transaction, right? There's certain things that I expect. I expect a military that can absolutely not just kick a double snakes, but obliterate it, right? Kick ass is not a thing. Obliterate is the proper expectation. I also want spies. I want to know what everyone's doing. I don't care if you're an ally. We can still be allies. We're going to have spies in your country. This is the way it works because it's our national security, just like it's your national security. I don't care if you have, fine, go ahead, allies, have spies here. Everyone acts like that it's some great, you know, offense. But what bothers me is when we have spies in places like, oh, I don't know, Russia or China, and the information that is leaked could compromise some of our only routes of information. Then that bothers me because, see, we pay tax dollars to have those people there. And these people, some of the people that chase spy lines, want to compromise their. Remember the what's her face? I can't remember her name now. She was the guy. Was it Joe Wilson's wife? She was the pencil pusher who acted like she was a field agent a la Jack Ryan. Oh, yeah. This was like back before Barack Obama was elected in 2008. And people were accused. It was people in the Bush administration who were accused of like compromising her somehow. Valerie Plame. That's right. And Joe Wilson apparently kicked the bucket in 2019. But Valerie Plame, oh, Democrats made her a big thing. Outed CIA spy. Oh, and they actually divorced too. Who knew that? But after Plame, who from the way that other spies or retired people that worked in DOD described her, she was kind of a pencil pusher. Her husband was a diplomat. And so she was, some of the people in the Bush administration were accused of compromising her, her being a spy this was back in 2003. And it came out like during the 08 election, et cetera, et cetera. They did I think it was a Vogue magazine cover, a Vanity Fair magazine cover, where she and her husband were in a convertible and they were dressed up like 1950s. You know, they're in the south of France in the 1950s, very Grace Kelly-esque. They made a big thing out of it. And it was, you know, how dare you leak this? This is just so, and now look at it. Where's the outrage? Because there are spies who could be and by compromised, I mean potentially killed for this. And that's the concern. And that's not what I paid for. That's not what we had our money stolen by the government for and via tax. So we can pretend that it's some sort of equal transaction. I mean, I want to have spies there and I want to do some shady stuff and I don't want to get caught doing the shady stuff. That's what I pay my money for. Keep us safe. Do your shady stuff and just let me know if I need to know. Right? That's what I pay you for. That's how I look at that relationship, right? So in all of this, it says that these U.S. intelligence compromised the defense ministry, the Wagner private military company, et cetera, et cetera. It exposed Russia's combat strategy to counter NATO. Did you really need an expose on that? Really? I mean, I just think if you're reading Cliff Notes on this, at this point, maybe sit out of the conversation and discuss how they had altered their fatalities. It also gets into South Korean national security officials responding to U.S. pressure about ammunition to Ukraine. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff that's in here. And the spying on Zelensky, et cetera, et cetera. And they had like a whole legend of forces that we apparently, I mean, duh, do you honestly think that we're not monitoring the Ukrainian presidency and his office? They said that there's a possibility the intel community might be seeing how the billions in aid being sent to Kyiv is being utilized. And I'm supposed to be mad at this? I want to know, how is our money being used? What am I getting purchased for the theft of my money? What are you buying with it? So there's a lot of stuff here, including, you know, it draws in a little bit, you know, some with regard to spy operations with Mossad, with South Korea, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, I'm just the downside of this is that other countries are going to be hesitant to confide in or share information or even off the record stuff. You got to have off the record conversations as it relates to government operations and military. You have to, because some people are gentle souls and they freak out when they realize the tough talk that has to happen sometimes behind closed doors. We're going to look at all this further. We're also going to get into some of the latest, the cognitive warfare. It's TikTok that China's planning. And Democrats, KJP was grilled on why Biden doesn't hold press conferences. Ooh, and fat activists, they want a law to ban weight discrimination. I might get canceled for that segment. If you're a bacon lover, today is your day. So whether alongside your eggs for breakfast, on a BLT, or wrapped around a filet, bacon is free for a year at Good Ranchers. Subscribe to get 24 ounces of Applewood smoked bacon added to each delicious box for a year. That's over $200 worth of bacon free. This is 100% American, high-quality bacon sourced from local farms with no added hormones or antibiotics. To subscribe, simply find your perfect box in the Good Ranchers curated selection of pasture-raised meat and wild-caught seafood. Select the frequency that works best for you, and then enjoy fewer trips to the meat aisle and more flavor at dinner. As long as you stay subscribed, your price will never increase. That's the Good Ranchers price lock guarantee. Subscribe today at goodranchers.com for free bacon in every box for a year. Use code Dana to get an additional $20 off your first order. Get the best meat America has to offer. Visit goodranchers.com. That's goodranchers.com, code Dana. Good Ranchers, American meat delivered.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
I got momentarily distracted because now they're coming after Ballet, the trans activist, and I just saw a video of one of the worst. I had 17 years of classical ballet, so we're going to open up a can of whoop butt here coming up. All right, moving on. I got distracted. I apologize. I literally just saw it and I about died. The Biden administration is launching a $5 billion program to speed up new vaccines and treatments. It's called Project Next Gen. So it's basically Operation Warp Speed Part 2. And they said that with money for new monoclonals, quote unquote, vaccines or injections that do not redacted produce mucosal immunity and pan-COVID vaccine. No one believes you. Moving on. Biden signed a bill ending COVID emergency with a month to spare. Hey, guys, 15 days to slow the spread. Yay. I mean, like, you know, 3 years and 15 days, but whatever. Right. I mean, same diff, except that he still has some reserve powers. The FBI is warning against using public phone charging areas like at airports, etc., because of juice jacking and people can infect your phone. Stay with us. As colleges and universities across the country hold their graduations, I'd like to highlight a place where students receive the best classical liberal arts education in America. And when these students graduate, they've studied the great books, the history of Western civilization and of America, and the meaning and history of the Constitution. Can you guess who I'm talking about? I'm talking about Hillsdale College. Hillsdale was founded in 1844 to offer the kind of education needed to preserve civil and religious liberty, and holds true to that mission while refusing to accept one penny of taxpayer funding, not even indirectly, in the form of student grants and loans. Hillsdale students also abide by an honor code, which ensures a unity of purpose and fosters lively, civil, and intelligent debate. See for yourself and learn from Hillsdale for free through their influential Speech Digest in Primus and by taking online courses on American history, the Constitution, and other subjects. Find out more at dana4hillsdale.com. That's dana4hillsdale.com. Join the battle over education for our country's future today.
Whether you just want to stay informed or just hear her vent about all the ridiculousness in the world, make sure to download the Dana Show podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
We need Congress to act. And if you think about assault weapons ban,
okay,
we know that. When we saw when the president was involved in 1994 to get that done, we saw gun violence go down.
That's
and when
a
it
lot.
Sunset 10
that's
years later, it went
it.
Back up. So we know
it.
What could work.
I'm not going to make it. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here. Your lovable curmudgeon who's just chomping at the bit. So that was Karine Jean-Pierre yesterday. Lying, because that's an actual literal lie that literally did not happen. My first book, which was all about guns and gun law, I get into that. I devote an entire chapter to it. And guess what? Since the time of that book's publishing, there's new data doubling down on the old data showing that the assault weapons ban didn't work. What's more? Let me just throw you some receipts. Okay. The Department of Justice had also done. They did a huge survey. The update and originally it was 2004. It's been updated. I think it was 2016. It was updated actually a couple of times. Updated assessment of the federal assault weapons ban impact on gun markets and gun violence. Guess what? It had zero effect on quote unquote gun homicide. absolutely no effect on it. And that's the Department of Justice. And they explained that it did not have an impact on gun crime through the late 1990s and beyond. So that's the Department of Justice. And I have written about this. I have tweeted about it. I have posted all the receipts to it. Also, fun addition. You also had an entire survey done by JMA looking at how the assault weapons ban did not have any impact on firearm homicide, which they were diving into the analysis of the effectiveness specifically of the assault weapons ban. And what they discovered was that there was no impact on gun homicide. Also, you have the RAND organization, Gun Policy in America, an entire survey which was updated in 2023, January, the effects of bans on the sale of assault weapons, which is a fake term, and high capacity, stupid term, magazines. And guess what? They have to acknowledge that there was no impact on gun homicide. I've read every single one of these things that I'm sharing with you. Oh, and also Snopes, they fact-checked a lawmaker who said the assault weapons ban had no impact, and they found that he was true. Then, of course, there's a giant New York Times piece that was published in September of 2014 where they admitted that, yes, the assault weapons ban did not have any impact on gun homicide. It had none, nada, zero, no effect at all whatsoever. You can lie about it all you want, and I will continue publicizing the actual facts of the matter every single damn time. Because it never happened. It didn't do anything. Furthermore, you're talking about banning cosmetic features on rifles. Well, if you have an adjustable stock, it makes the bullets come out faster. Hearing some of these people try to talk about ballistics, like, oh, you know what I mean? 223 will explode in your body. It's not how that works. So for the love. It is literally like me trying to sit here and explain football to you. It sounds like I have a better grasp of, you know, whack bat or Calvin ball than I do actual football. So what she's saying literally never happened. It's a lie. But they cling to it because this is about control. And also, too, if you're going to have this conversation, you have to also have the conversation about defensive gun usage. And this whole thing, I want to address this really quickly, too, because the CDC keeps pushing this. And I saw, I believe, another story about this where they were saying that, gun violence, the number one killer of children, et cetera, et cetera. To get all these people to, you know, freak out. And there was they keep pushing the CDC thing. The data, the New England Journal of Medicine had this letter, and it was based on like some really, I think, faulty CDC data, because they include in their definition of children all the way up till age 19. And when you compare this to the data of criminal, you know, felonious behavior, drug violence, gang activity, etc., the main factor in driving what they call gun homicides with children are 18 and 19 year olds involved in gangs and drugs. Like, it is such an overwhelming majority that when you remove that, you know, those ages from that, it actually drops it down to like below automobile and everything else. And I mean, even still, I mean, it's not a top cause of homicide. I mean, you have like drug overdoses and all of this other stuff that actually factor in more. So they have to inflate that number because they want to gaslight people into thinking that school shootings are happening all the time everywhere. It's almost like they're threatening your kids in a way. Oh, you better do this or, you know, something's going to happen. You know, this is what I mean. That's what it feels like. That's what what they're doing, whether they realize it or not. And so all of this based on the CDC data. And yet when you remove those ages, the 18 and 19 year olds, I mean, there goes the whole narrative. I'm not joking. Like, space heaters are killing, I mean, drownings are killing more kids. When you remove the 18 to 19, this is the problem of politicization of science. Because they're trying to desperately fit things to fit a narrative instead of fitting their narrative to the facts. They desperately want this to be political. They want it to, they want to politicize it so they can control it. They misrepresent this stuff, which I think is downright ghoulish. It is ghoulish to sit here and misrepresent child fatalities because of drug and gang activity and try to scare moms into thinking that school shootings are happening all the time everywhere. It's not the case. And nowhere in, at all in this conversation is any discussion over defensive gun usage. Although, remember, we had the conversation when this controversy broke, how the CDC hid two separate surveys that they themselves took. This was back when Obama was commissioning studies on quote-unquote gun violence, and they were trying to say that the CDC was barred from studying gun violence. In fact, that's not what the legislation said at all. It said that the CDC is not allowed to promote either gun ownership or gun control. I don't want a government agency promoting anything. I don't even think that damn agency should exist, but that's beside the point. It's just, it's lies and it's the politicization of science. Speaking of which, politicization of science. I had this in the newsletter last night. Audio soundbite 11. Neil deGrasse Tyson, who I cannot stand. I just think there are certain people who get high on their own farts, and he is one of them. This is the exact problem, in a nutshell, the problem with leftist thought and the politicization of science. Listen.
That list of highly pedigreed medical professionals that you are citing, I'm not interested in medical pedigree. I'm interested in medical consensus, in scientific consensus. The moment someone says, well, I'm of this highfalutin school or this, that's like, okay, that means they're going to say something that goes against the consensus, and they want to use that to help other people follow what it is they say.
Doesn't he do
I'm
that?
I'm just saying you need someone who represents a medical consensus here to have that conversation with.
He said, quote, I'm interested in medical consensus and scientific consensus. He added, the individual scientist does not matter. Wow. So Tyson would have been against Galileo back in the day. Galileo Galilei. Tyson would have hated him, you know, because he went against the consensus. He would have hated Copernicus. Why? Because Copernicus went against consensus. He would have hated Louis Pasteur because Louis Pasteur went against consensus. He would have also hated Marie Curie, but because she went against consensus. He would have hated every major scientist who has done more to advance medicine, exploration, and so much more than he could ever hope to, because they went against consensus. In fact, it's the outside of the mainstream periphery. Those are the people that have driven this. Those are the people that have driven innovation and driven real medicinal progression. His idea, consensus is not synonymous with truth. Consensus isn't data. It is not evidence. Evidence is evidence. Data is data. Consensus is neither of those things. And under his view, if Neil deGrasse Tyson had his way, hell, we'd all be putting leeches on our legs and everything else, our limbs and bleeding out to cure our illnesses. We'd think that the world is flat, that the sun revolves around us. Oh, we'd think all these things. But see, this is progressivism defined in one soundbite. One soundbite, this is progressivism. It's this idea that an idea isn't safe unless it is widely accepted. People have to see other people say it's okay before they can also agree that it's okay. This is this new standard of measure that is applied when determining the veracity of any singular claim. How many people support it? I mean, if many support it, then it's true. And if not many support it, then I guess it's false. I mean, they're allowing the power of the mob to dictate reality. That explains why we are seeing some of the crazy stuff that we're seeing. I mean, it's not science. This is politics at this point. They're destroying science. I think he needs to change his professional designation because he's a joke. I included in your newsletter, audio soundbite 14, Alan Savory himself is, this is from a documentary. He's a Zimbabwean livestock farmer, and he works with land management and, you know, all of this other stuff. And, you know, he supports grass-fed beef, and he's like he's really into, they call him an apostate ecologist. And they consider him so controversial. Like, he's the guy who came out in 2014 and was saying, like, eat more beef and save the world. I want you to listen to this soundbite, because this is what he had to say about consensus, i.e. peer-reviewed paper or peer-reviewed theories. Listen to this. This is from a documentary.
What is science? People talk glibly about science. What is science? People coming out of a university with a master's degree or a PhD, you take them into the field, and they literally don't believe anything unless there's a peer-reviewed paper. It's the only thing they accept. And you say to them, but let's observe, let's think, let's discuss. They don't do it. It's just, is it in a peer-reviewed paper or not? That's their view of science. I think it's pathetic. Gone into universities as bright young people, they come out of them brain dead, not even knowing what science means. They think it means peer-reviewed papers, etc. No, that's academia. And if a paper is peer-reviewed, it means everybody thought the same, therefore they approved it. An unintended consequence is that when new knowledge emerges, new scientific insights, they can never, ever be peer-reviewed. So we're blocking all new advances in science that are big advances. If you look at the breakthroughs in science, almost always they don't come from the center of that profession. They come from the fringe. The finest candle makers in the world couldn't even think of electric lights.
I love that.
They don't come from within. They often come from outside the breaks.
I love that. And that's in, if you get the newsletter, you got that. That's a great clip. And it's a great reminder. He's like, that's not science, that's academia. We have more to come, including, you know, speaking of, you know, all of this. So apparently the Royal Academy of Dance hired a former IT, a dude, as their first transgender dancer. Black Rifle Coffee Company set out on a mission to make the best cup of coffee that's ever hit your mug. And I think they've hit that mission straight on. Their dream has been to sell enough premium coffee to build a support network for veterans, first responders, and law enforcement. And thanks to your support, that dream has come true. Black Rifle Coffee is roasted by a veteran-led team of brilliant coffee graders who work tirelessly to roast and bag the highest quality coffee here in America. And the coffee is truly one of a kind and my favorite. Your support has helped Black Rifle Coffee Company expand their team of active duty service members, veterans, and veteran family members. And they were able to donate over 120,000 bags of coffee to veterans and first responders in 2022. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana and use my code Dana at checkout for 20% off your purchase and your first coffee club order. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. Use code Dana and also look for Black Rifle Coffee in grocery and convenience stores. Black Rifle Coffee, America's coffee.
Catch the Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
Me and you, sister.
This is in Florida. And there's Gavin Newsom. Clapping. He's got the, and making a just a grimaced face. I'm not going to lie to you. I watched that more times than I'm proud to admit. And, you know, I almost made that the leading image for the prep email that I sent out to you this morning. Because his face, like at one point, he just has his hands together and he's just grimacing. He looks so uncomfortable. And notice how everyone else is clapping normally. What is this? This thing that he does where he throws his arms together like a seal. What is that? But he goes to Florida and this is what he's doing. I mean, what was the purpose of this? What was the purpose?
To get away from California?
Yeah, so he's going to go and do that. All right, so coming up, we've got to, I knew this was coming. We got to talk about the guy who was accepted into the Royal Ballet Academy, not as a dude dancer, but as a female. He can't even go on point. He's too heavy to go on point. Yep. I'm not sorry. That's the fact of the matter, right? This is an art form, okay? We don't have time for people who get their feelings hurt over a complete, you know, just fact. But this guy, and now as someone who studied classical ballet for 17 years and understands the amount of time that, I mean, he's got the worst technique. It enrages me because they're degrading an art form. Yeah. It is, ballet is really, it's very difficult. I mean, you have to, I mean, it's grueling and it's not for everybody. Definitely not for this guy because he's a guy. That's why. Yeah. All right, we got a lot more coming up. Second hour on the way. You don't want to miss. Stick with us. Americans have had it. They're done supporting companies that rake in hundreds of millions, sometimes billions of dollars, while trashing the country that made their success possible. Until recently, we had to take it. But companies like Patriot Mobile are building a whole new economy, one which embraces the values that made America the greatest country on earth. Patriot Mobile, America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, offers dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks. Plus, they offer a coverage guarantee. If you're not happy with your coverage, you can switch to a different network for free without changing carriers. With Patriot Mobile, their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Just visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call them right now at 878-PATRIOT. Get free activation today using offer code Dana. We should stand together and support companies that share our values. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. That's patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT.
Given this leak and previous leaks, should the American people think that the administration is losing the battle against whoever wants to steal our secrets, whether it's foreign adversaries or hackers or not?
I think the American people need to know and deserve to know that we're taking this very, very seriously. The president has been briefed on this. He will stay briefed on this. The Department of Defense is looking into this. They are leading an interagency effort here to review whatever national security implications might come out of all this. And the Department of Justice is leading a criminal investigation. So we're taking this very, very seriously. There is no excuse for these kinds of documents to be in the public domain. They don't deserve to be in the public domain. They deserve to be protected. So we're going to get to the bottom of this. And then if there's actions that need to be taken as we learn more about the extent of what happened here, we'll obviously take those.
Well, so that's John Kirby, who was yesterday speaking about the leak of all of this. It's classified information. And from New York Times, Wall Street Journal, these photographs of classified documents, they weren't actually classified documents by themselves, but photographs of them. I can't even believe this is a sentence I'm saying in news. They were put up on a Discord server on a message board for Minecraft. Yeah. Welcome to the show. It's Days of Our United States just continues. Dana Lashier with you, your lovable curmudgeon. You can listen coast to coast, or you can also stream the program, YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV, the simulcast of the radio program. Now, the New York Times first reported this after all of this came out in these servers, and then the Wall Street Journal laid out one Bellingcat, which is like a defense. It's made up of former defense, officials. They do online investigations, etc. They're based in the Netherlands, and they look at open source intelligence. They said that one of the images was crudely edited, and apparently that's the one where they were trying to lower the fatalities, the Russian fatalities, correct? Yeah. And it's so this is how these documents came out. They were dated March 1st, posted on a message board on Discord, which is mainly used by gamers, for Minecraft. And apparently a message board for a Filipino YouTube celebrity. I mean, that's like weirdly specific, right? Of all the places to put that, I would love to know how that got there. I mean, I'm interested in the other aspects of the story, but I find this fascinating. Like, why there? Why there? And it spread to 4chan and then Telegram and then Twitter and then the New York Times and Wall Street Journal. So the documents, they're not actually documents. Let me rephrase that. The photographs of the classified documents, they have a classified stamping on them, etc. They have they show statistics, the cumulative number of KIA soldiers on both Russian and Ukrainian sides, except the sources differ because the first source, the one of those images that came up on 4chan, according to the Wall Street Journal, showed more Russian losses than Ukrainian. And then the second from Donbas Devushka showed the reverse. And then the second one that showed the much higher Ukrainian KIA numbers, that showed crude. That was the one that they said was crudely edited. And it, I mean, it's like so badly done. It's insane. I mean, the numbers are blurrier. The resolution's bad. The spacing's looks. I mean, you look at it and you're like, yeah, that was totally altered. That's like basically someone changing an F to an A on their report card and they do a bad job of it. That's exactly what this is like. And the other thing, too, from the, I think this might be, is this, this might be Washington Post that has, no, Bellingcat has this. Apparently, one of there's a clue that they were talking about. There was Gorilla Glue that was visible in the background of some of the photos dated from March. So they think that, you know, the documents were photographed in the same location. And they said that from the Washington Post that there's a really grim outlook in Kyiv because they said that the ammunition, air defense shortfalls, what they called Western supplied weaponry. Globe and Mail said that Russian hackers had conducted a successful cyber attack on this Canadian, I think we had this as a headline, a Canadian natural gas pipeline company. But now apparently that was being challenged as to whether or not it ever happened in the first place. Timothy Egan, according to Globe and Mail, is the chief executive of the Canadian Gas Association. They represent the natural gas industry there. He says that he was contacted by an American journalist about the documents, and he said he wasn't aware of any kind of compromised, you know, infrastructure with regards to gas distribution or anything like that. So and then there was the New York Times report where they said that the president of South Korea, the Secretary for Foreign Affairs, Yi Mun-hui, had told his boss, National Security Advisor Kim Song-han, that the government was mired in concerns that the U.S. would not be the end user if South Korea were to comply with a U.S. request for ammunition. According to the documents, they said that the secret report was based on signals intelligence, which meant that the U.S. had been spying on one of its major allies in Asia. That's why I'm probably sure that they have South Korea spies here. Everybody has spies everywhere. So, I mean, if anything, it is really, I mean, it's embarrassing that the leak happened because with the Snowden stuff and some are saying, I think it's the Wall Street Journal that's saying that this is what the worst leak since Edward Snowden. I think that's how they're classifying this. And there was this story, pulling this up, that had been published at the time where it got into Angela Merkel and apparently how we had tapped her phones or something to that effect. And that came out and it was just all, I mean, it's just embarrassing. It's not surprising that anybody would spy on any, you know, even allies. I mean, that's kind of, you know, par for the course. She actually testified on the NSA spying affair. This is a piece over at DW.com that gets into, it was from 2017, how they heard evidence from her at the time when she was chancellor about spying on allies by both American and German intel services. There was no actual, any like serious wrongdoing that came out. I mean, but it's one of those things where it's just, you don't talk about it. It's embarrassing for nations when this stuff comes out and you don't talk about it. But the real damage, CNN had talked about documents indicating that the Mossad, which is the intel agency over at Israel, they were trying to influence Israel's own domestic politics. So this from CNN said an intel report about Israel, and this is from these documents that were on a Minecraft message board and a Filipino YouTube celebrity fandom on the Discord server. sparked outrage in Jerusalem. It was produced by the CIA, had sourced to Signals Intelligence, said Israel's main intel agency, the Mossad, had been encouraging protests against their new government, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, and people are were upset because the general thought is that intel agencies aren't supposed to work against us. They're supposed to work against everyone else. But I think one of the things that comes out of this, and I don't know why people are acting like this is a surprise, the amount, I guess, of, I don't know if I would say pressure, because I don't know if I would say that they pressured them or pushed allies enough. They really were looking at the way that, you know, according to the photograph documents, the way that the United States was dealing with its allies with regard to sending munitions or weaponry, et cetera, to Ukraine, and trying to push them to do more. So that is what I think one of the things I get out of this. One of the biggest damages, though, actually, too, there, it shows also how deep we have intel in Russia, which actually that did sort of, I was sort of surprised that, I don't know why, but we apparently have, you know, some pretty deep embeds in Russia, because we were able to get, you know, the fact that there's some of this information exists. However, that being said, there's the legitimate concern on like the Valerie Plame stuff of those spies being compromised now. I mean, there's like almost 100 photographs of folded and wrinkled briefing slides from February and March. So like they're all marked top secret, Psi Gamma for Signals Intelligence, and no foreign for no foreign nationals. So Senate intelligence leaders are going to get a briefing. They got a, well, they got a first briefing yesterday. And this, they said that the, I mean, so much of it is on Russia. I think very little of it is South Korea and the Mossad. But it, this is, these, a lot of these documents, according to Reuters, and Reuters is quoting a former Pentagon official, Michael Mulroy, a lot of these documents were only and only in the hands of the United States. So it is very much a U.S. leak. So what is the purpose for it? I think when you discover for what purpose, who benefits from it being leaked, then you can, because it's embarrassing for Russia. It's super embarrassing. And it shows that we have spies in their defense ministry. Or at least something. That's pretty, you know, that's pretty impressive, I got to say. See, this is what I pay my money for, right? First of all, why I allow the government to steal my money and taxes. We got moles in their defense ministry. You know, I imagine it's probably like Call of Duty Cold War when you get to go in the briefing room and Mikhail Gorbachev is sitting there, right? And you're sitting there and you're looking at his not really separatists, but some of his more, his goon squad that's sitting across the table. I don't know if you guys have played that, but that's like one of the best. Oh my gosh, it's so amazing. Anyway, it's like the same thing, right? Joking. But that does show how deep our spies were. So this is, it's embarrassing for the United States that it got out, but it's more embarrassing, I think, also for Russia. I just don't want our spies to be compromised, but this is huge. And we don't even know the extent, because there's, what do they say, 100? There could be like 100 photographs of different slides. So this is just, you know, some of what we know now. Also, a couple of things here. We're going to get to this towards the bottom of the hour. But we got some wokery for you. I read this story on The Hill. The headline is, "I was screaming before you interrupted me. American politics has become amplified rage." It's a great piece from John Turley, who was discussing the Tennessee House, which we're also going to talk about. Those three lawmakers, one of them, it seemed like it was a stunt from Republicans, since one of them was able to be restored after they were expelled, one was restored. They were on Good Morning America. I mean, you have people planning funerals, and these people, these lawmakers, are celebrating themselves being on Good Morning America. We're going to talk about this because one of the lawmakers there had been in trouble for assaulting someone before.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Okay, so This YouGov poll, this is actually hysterical. Have you ever hit the button to close an elevator's doors because you saw someone was trying to get on and you wanted to leave without them? The number of U.S. adults who said yes, it was actually pretty, 61% of U.S. adults said no. 50% of 18 to 29-year-olds said no. Then it starts getting a little weird. 65 and older, 83% said no. But the number who said yes, 18 to 29-year-olds, 39% said yes. 41% of 30 to 44-year-olds said yes. I'm not going to lie. I totally think it. I don't do it. But if you're not in front of the door and the door looks like it's closing, I may try to help it. I'm just saying. You know, I don't know. We got to come back to this. It's a thing. We also have to talk about how Steve has never eaten Shake and Bake. Yeah. Also, New York Times. Apparently, some American women are relocating, leaving the United States for romance. They're trying to improve their dating lives. And they said that the dating scene has become so toxic in the United States. And I wonder why. I wonder why. Why could that be? So they said that they're leaving. They're gonna go, like, for instance, France or somewhere else. And what are you gonna, you're gonna complain about it there and then ruin that? Like, you already ruined Pepe Le Pew. You know, he's been canceled. They canceled that skunk. Interesting. I don't know what I think of this headline. Weight loss may mean a risk of death for older adults. This is so stupid. So if you lose weight, then you'll die? I mean, it's a study that looked at 17,000 adults, 70 years old in Australia, 2,000 in the U.S., 65 and up. They found that even a 5% weight loss increased mortality risk, particularly in older dudes. Weight gain in healthy older people showed no association. Well, that does actually make me happy, because then I can eat, like, bread and desserts and, like that one lady said in that viral video, and get all fat and sassy, you know, when I get old. So that's something. And also, General Milley is stepping down. Is anybody sad? I don't think so. Stay with us.
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all. Live or on demand, The Dana Show.
Girlhood becomes stronger when there's more of us behind it.
Only certain people are allowed in, but who's allowing?
What's on your guys'
That's
chin?
That's the real question.
Who is? I don't. Maybe there isn't one.
And maybe it's on their chair. That's part of it.
Do you have any relationship to the concept of girlhood?
I absolutely do. I find girlhood to be inspiring. There are a lot of human beings girls who transcend what their gender is supposed to be.
There are a lot of human beings that are girls.
And that to me is something
reminds
I draw
me of
strength
that New Kids on the Block
from.
Song. We met a lot of people absolutely. And girls. That was an actual line from it. I have no idea why I remember that. What in the 5 o'clock shadow hell did I just watch? And play for all of you listening. I need a moment. Oh my gosh, I put a hand over my mouth. Welcome back to the program. What happened to the segment? It's gone. Dana Lashier with you. You're a bemused curmudgeon. And this was like a conversation that Dylan Mulvaney had with this guy named Jeffrey Marsh, who looks like a super groomer. And I think he Lorraine said he wanted to help kids transition without their parents knowing. You know, here it's really hard for me to accept your cosplay as a chick when you just half ass it. You don't even shave? Like, you got a 5 o'clock shadow. Is that on purpose? Because you don't even have to have that. You still look like a dude. You still sound like a dude. You don't need, it's almost like they keep that on. Like, sometimes how women just have hairy armpits and then they pose on Instagram with their hairy armpits everywhere just to show you how edgy they are. Look at my hairy armpit. I feel like that's kind of the same thing in a way, what they were doing with that. But what did Marsh say that a lot of humans are girl? You think? What in the world? Okay, so this gets us to that Bud Light story, because apparently in Hell's Kitchen, Bud Light sales dropped 60% draft. Bottle sales dropped 70%. Again, this is in Hell's Kitchen, New York. First time I was ever in Hell's Kitchen was for Wendy Williams. First time I was ever, I did any kind of TV was with Wendy Williams, who was a very gracious hostess, and she was a pioneer in female radio, and I'd fight anybody. She had a whole wig room. It was amazing. I've never seen a woman who had everything so dialed down. But this is in Hell's Kitchen. They have a pretty sizable, pretty vocal gay community in Hell's Kitchen. 70%. Like the gay community is mad at Bud Light. So but here's the thing. You've seen the sales drop, but you haven't seen them increase. Where are all the trans people just drinking up that Bud Light, huh? I mean, Bud Light, Anheuser-Busch went to this great extent. You had the VP of Anheuser-Busch, who had gone out and said that they were, how did she put it, trying to combat the fratty and out-of-touch branding. And she noted that younger demos weren't drinking beer, particularly Bud Light, which sounded more like younger demos just didn't want to drink crappy beer. I don't think it's a problem with beer per se. I think they didn't want to drink what you call beer. You know, your trans beer. So I think they did the least they could do. And they quietly partnered with, I think, the most offensive cartoon-like caricature of women's behavior that they could find, Dylan Mulvaney. I mean, honestly, if one of my girlfriends was acting like him, I think I would probably like try to bake or act her. I think I would. But notice how the people who are flipping out over the Bud Light stuff, like, well, would you have Chastin, Mr. Buttigieg, who said, quote, if you're upset about a beer company supporting civil rights, you might want to start bottling your tears. LGBTQ people drink water too. Going to boycott that next? That was so dumb. But how many people don't understand the concept of civil rights? I mean, progressives have so bastardized this definition that it's like thrown out as a red card every time they don't get something that they want. I mean, we're at the point where even the mere refusal to purchase another woman's birth control pills means that you're somehow denying her a civil right. That's so dumb. So what civil right is Bud Light? What were they supporting again? I don't know. Like, what civil right were they supporting? I mean, nobody, and no, it's like watching Elizabeth Warren drink beer. Nobody believes you. Nobody believes that. I don't believe that he drinks beer. So I think they need, the Gillette sponsorship would probably be more appropriate for that 5 o'clock shadow. I'm just saying. Yeah, what right, as Kane asks, does the trans community actually have? What do they not have?
Right.
Exactly. Okay, can we talk about the ballet dancer? Okay, full disclosure. There's certain things I get really snotty about. Eyeliner. If I see, like, you know, some of these third waivers who don't know how to do a smoky eye, it's like petty stuff, right? I get real snotty about, you know, my dog. I get really snotty about ballet. I had 17 years of my life were spent studying classical ballet. I was in the classroom every day. I was every day at the bar. Constantly. There was always workshops going on, all kinds of stuff. And it is incredibly grueling. I think a lot of the discipline that I have in life comes from that. It gives you, you have to be disciplined. And it is a sacrifice, and it very much is, I mean, it is super competitive. And you do have to absolutely have discipline. And there, it is a beautiful art form. I think it's absolutely beautiful because it emphasizes, you know, the God's creation, the human form. And it's very male and female oriented, very unapologetically so, celebrating, especially with a pas de deux, the two sexes, etc. And it's about, you know, emphasizing movement and form and the gracefulness. And they are very, ballet schools are very discriminatory in terms of merit, physical ability, for a reason. You know, just like the military is discriminatory, they want the best fighting force. You want the best performers. And now we have this story of a man who changed his name to Sophia Rebecca, a former rally driver and IT technician, was the first, I don't believe in the phrase trans woman, to pass exams at the Royal Ballet Academy, which changed its rules in 2013 to allow dudes in. He is 6'3". 6'3". And I was watching the side-by-side video of him with another ballerina. There's no way he can go on point. His turnout, I mean, just the video that Juan is showing in the simulcast, he has zero turnout, zero technique. I don't even know how you can be admitted into the Royal Ballet Academy when, I mean, I feel like I'm watching Jim Carrey perform on Mad TV as Vera, right? Remember that with the little pigtails? I mean, no joke. No upper body gracefulness, no movement. I mean, his toes stick entirely in. It is heinous, and it is a mockery of the art form. For the sake of what? I mean, this would have been, it would have been an SNL skit. It's like, it's Pat from SNL. It's a mockery of the form. Not everyone, not even all women can do ballet. And it doesn't even matter about weight or anything else. Sometimes you can be a very lanky, lithe woman who is the perfect height. You can't be super tall, who's the perfect height, etc. But you just have zero, coordination or grace, right? Not every woman can do it. Not every man can do it. But to see this accommodated and shoved in people's faces, to me, it's a mockery of the form, because what I'm watching is not a mastery of the skill, and I don't even see an attempt to master the skill. If someone wants to do something on their own time, whatever. But to force it on everyone and to say that, I mean, I just want to know, what is the skill set of class that he's in? And he's 6'3". How do you partner with someone? Right? I mean, the technique that ballerinas develop, I mean, there's a reason why you spend the majority of class on bar exercises, doing basic movements that work everything from your turnout in your ankle all the way up to your knee, all the way up to your hips, keeping your hips completely level, depending if you're in an arabesque or whatever you're doing. There is a reason. I mean, these are drilled into you. The saying was always that a ballerina can tell if she misses a lesson in one day. The instructor can tell if it's several days, and the audience can tell if it's a week. I mean, it is a very strict discipline. And it is something that, girls start when they're young. By the time, if you're entering ballet when you're 3 or 4 years old, but you're not even ready really to go on point. I mean, it's early if you're 13, 14. Because they want to make sure that your ankles are strong, that you have good turnout, so that you're not injuring yourself. And even then, I was talking to a friend of mine, her daughter just qualified to go on point. And now they have these amazing silicone toe pads, because it is, it's paper mache, it's a hard box, and it scratches up, your toes bleed. One of my friends lost her toenails. I mean, it is a very, it's a rite of passage for ballerinas. We had to use just like a little bit of lamb's wool. We had our ballet instructor, and I thought he was fantastic, by the way. He was incredibly strict and super condescending, and I loved him. But you would just use like a little bit of lamb's wool. I try to hide. Sometimes I try to cheat, and I would sneak off and try to put a toe pad in. No, you didn't do that. That wasn't allowed. Now they have silicone pads. They wanted you, the true ballerina, he would say, wants to feel the floor through the bottom of her shoe. And I know I see this guy. It's not ballet. And I get really snotty about it, because I think that there are some things that celebrate uniquely the women's form and the gracefulness of humans. And I don't see that in this. I don't see that at all. Can you imagine somebody like doing, trying to, It's like I see like Phelan Fox going into MMA or trying, you know, UFC won't tolerate it. That's a dude who used to fight as a dude, and he treats the women's leagues like they're JV, and he identifies as a woman now, and he goes and tries to beat up women. And he got into it. There were some people trying to criticize Ronda Rousey because Ronda Rousey was like, I have no interest in fighting Phelan Fox. And why would she? I mean, it's a dude who gets in a ring and thinks that a couple of years of hormone therapy are going to fix everything that nature has done, including puberty. But this, I mean, I don't know. I love ballet. I think it's one of the best things that humans have done in terms of artistic expression, and the discipline and the no nonsense and the strict separation of the sexes and celebrating them each in their unique likeness. And to see it made like a joke like this is just it's actually offensive. And it's an insult to all of the young women and the young men who, and don't think that guys who go into ballet are, you know, they're all gay. In fact, they're all players. Most of them are players. But it's an offense to all these, you know, these people, young adults and teenagers and even kids who are genuine in their study and spend so many years of their lives perfecting this, getting the reflexes correct, the turnout, training their bodies where it's muscle memory. And then like this, what is he going to get a partnership next? I swear, if like Block Shoes or Danskin or somebody, I will scream.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
All right, so first one, it's like Fight Club for the classroom. A Florida middle school teacher, a Florida woman, hosted student fights in her classroom at Griffin Middle School. Middle School. She was accused of organizing fights, according to WCTV in Tallahassee. She was identified as the teacher at Griffin Middle School. She's facing charges for contributing to the delinquency of a minor. For what court documents say, it literally was like a fight club. The first rule about fight club is you don't talk about fight club. So somebody talked. They said that several sixth grade girls told detectives that they had participated in planned fights during school hours, and they alleged that they were invited back for additional fights. They also said that she made statements like, and the teacher, Angel Footman, 23 years old, she apparently made statements including 30 seconds, no screaming, no yelling, no phones. And a detective indicates in a probable cause affidavit that he reviewed videos and identified her sitting at her desk, failing to intervene and making statements like no screaming, no nothing, stop pulling hair. I mean,
I'm on the fence about this.
Why are you on the fence? I mean, at least she was pulling hair is not like a legitimate fight tactic. Come on.
Part of me is entertained by the whole idea, I think.
It's Fight Club for the class.
And then the other part is like, you
have you
be
seen
doing
like
that.
The bad behavior of some of these kids, though? You know, I'm like, Anyway, so she's in trouble. She said she didn't organize them, but she said that she didn't want to intervene. So now she faces four counts of contributing to the delinquency of a minor. It's like a middle school fight club. There you go. A drunk Florida man swears at children in Disney and then threatens police officers. Just another Disney day. He was arrested at the resort in Orlando, the magical place. So apparently the drunken man, he was visiting Disney Springs, the shopping and dining center, 30-year-old Edward Stevenson. He pled not guilty to trespass, according to Orange Circuit Court records. He claimed to be a registered nurse and while he was threatening law enforcement, and he wasn't apparently. He was being belligerent and cursing at kids and making inappropriate comments to minors at the toy store. So that wasn't good. He was arrested. So can't do that at Disney or really anywhere. Stick with us.
We have learned that the suspect in this incident was a current employee with Old National Bank. We have also learned that he purchased the weapon used in this tragic incident on yesterday on April the 4th. He purchased the weapon legally from one of the local dealerships here in Louisville.
That is the Louisville police chief who says that the killer there at the National Bank was able, we're learning a little bit more information about, you know, this individual and how they purchased their firearm, and apparently it was a legal purchase at an FFL. Welcome back to the program. Top of our third hour. Dana Lash here with you. Make sure you sign up over at Substack. Lots of good stuff that comes out of there every single, well, every single day, all throughout the week. And this, you can subscribe, you get my prep, you get all kinds of stuff, including deep dives on, like, for instance, I got a piece on self-defense and Daniel Perry coming out. So that'll be an interesting read. So for this, we're still learning some details about, I mean, all of this is still coming out. We still don't have the manifesto from the Nashville.
I think we know why.
Killer. They said they were going to release it. The moment they wrapped investigation, they said that they would release it. So we'll see, but a little troubling that it's not out there yet, because I think we all kind of, some of it seems like it would be obvious. But the latest that we know with regards to Louisville, the killer, as you heard the police chief there, had gone purchased legally their firearm, and 23 years old, was an employee of the bank, worked as a summer intern for the bank for 3 years, from New York Post, before joining as a commercial development professional in 2021 and a full-time associate and portfolio banker last year. He was told he was going to be fired from the bank, and he had apparently left a note, for his parents, according to CNN. He left a note for his parents and a friend saying that he was going to shoot up the bank. He graduated from University of Alabama. He had a Master of Science in Finance in 2020. And he was an all-around athlete. He played basketball, football. One of the things, though, and this was the Daily Beast piece, they said that the killer had so many concussions during his time playing football that he was pictured wearing a helmet when he was playing basketball. Like, not like a regular, but a concussive helmet, if that's a thing. I didn't even know that such a thing existed. But a classmate said that he had had multiple concussions. Now, it seems like it's a little bit more complicated than just saying, oh, well, he was going to be fired, so he was a disgruntled employee. I mean, I'm sure that played a part in it. However, the friend also told the Daily Beast that the killer said that he was suicidal. And whether or not that was included in the note that he had left for his parents and a friend, that hasn't been made public. But the social media trail was, kind of indicative of, I don't know, he had the pronoun stuff on LinkedIn. But this issue of, he said he was suicidal. I don't know if concussions play a part, plays that much of a part, but it's just such an odd story. But he had left a suicide letter. And you don't know whether or not, there were any other warning signs. I don't think we're at that point with all of this yet. But clearly, he was having some major issues. And apparently there was a girlfriend, I don't know, that was reported, but nothing else. The fact that she existed is the only thing that's been reported. But just very, we still don't know a whole heck of a lot. So it makes you wonder, clearly there was a mental health aspect to this. And then being fired apparently wasn't incredibly helpful with the whole thing. So, you really don't know until you get more information. I mean, I think as more people speak out, and this usually happens, in the days and weeks after something like this, then you hear, friends and family say, well, we knew this or we knew that. Like, for instance, with the Nashville killer, they were apparently so worried about their daughter's mental health that they didn't even want her owning firearms. And she lived with them. She may have been 28 years old, but she still lived at home. And they had no idea, apparently, that she still had one. And they were worried. So it indicates that there was a level of concern about some kind of danger, and maybe perhaps not just to herself. And stuff like this comes out and you just kind of, you kind of wonder. So that hasn't stopped these politicians, though, including the mayor of Louisville, from going out there and railing against, you know, certain type of rifles, nothing's going to change. Even, you know, if they were to achieve what is never going to happen and ban them, it's just not going to happen. You also have the Tennessee Three, because they've been whether it's Nashville or Louisville, they, if you've, I mean, I'm sure you've been following this story. The three lawmakers, two of whom had been expelled, one of them was restored. And I'm pulling this up. I think this was the last night, which was this just a stunt for Republicans there? I mean, I don't know. I think you I don't know. But the lawmakers, one of them was expelled. They came in. It wasn't just a protest. I mean, they led literally a riotous mob inside of the state capitol. And there was shoving and pushing of police, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They were stripped of their committee assignments. They, you know, had a vote was held to expel them. And they expelled Justin Jones of Nashville, Democrat, and Justin Pearson of Memphis, a Democrat. And then Gloria Johnson of Knoxville somehow survived that vote. They didn't meet the necessary two-thirds majority in order to make that happen. And then there was another lawmaker, was one of the lawmakers was restored. And then they went on Good Morning America. And they were posing and had huge smiles. And one of the lady lawmaker was making jazz hands. And it looked like she tweeted and said, "So this is the thing. I'm so happy we had the opportunity to talk about the gun violence problem on the national stage. We must act now. These young people and their parents want us to act now to save lives." And then they're posing in front of the Good Morning America sign. It seems very self-glorifying to me. They're on this like media tour. They got invited to the White House. Did the police officers who engaged and in Nashville and took out the militant trans terrorist, did they get invited to the White House?
No such luck.
Did the president at all tweet about the officer who was in surgery for the? No, I didn't see. No, I didn't see any tweets about that. Mm-mm. No. I mean, it's just shocking. But here's the thing. So this story, let me pull this story up. Very interesting. One of the Tennessee Three members, Justin Pearson, was busted as a total fraud. And this individual, because there were reports about past, like previous, like past behavior. And I'm looking for my piece on this because I have a million things up here. So bear with me. One of the Democrats was previously banned from the Capitol because he assaulted a GOP speaker. Well, I know. It's pretty stunning. In fact, this is a piece. It's Justin Jones. And this is from the Tennessean. And he said, the Tennessean reports, a protester behind a series of recent demonstrations at Tennessee State Capitol was banned from the building in order to have no contact with House Speaker Glenn Cassata after being charged Thursday with assault. They said Justin Jones, 23 at the time, was charged with two counts of misdemeanor assault, one count of disorderly conduct, after authorities say that he threw a cup of hot coffee into an elevator, striking Cassata and Representative Deborah Moody, a Republican from Covington. According to the arrest documents, Jones, quote, attempted to push his way past uniformed state troopers as he approached the elevator while yelling Cassata is a racist, and then he's accused of throwing a paper to-go cup filled with an unknown liquid believed to be hot coffee into the elevator. The liquid splashed onto Cassata and Moody. So this guy isn't just a left-wing agitator. He's a violent left-wing agitator. And he led a violent mob onto the floor of the Capitol in Tennessee and disrupted the legislative process while encouraging, at least from the video, it seems, these rioters to engage in you know, pushing and shoving, etc., with the police that were there, the troopers that were there. And all three of these Tennessee lawmakers, who do you think is the one who was restored? If you said this one, if you said Jones, you were correct. I mean, Johnson survived her expulsion vote. But I am just kind of shocked that Justin Pearson's still expelled. But Justin Jones was the one who's been restored. The guy with the rap sheet of assault. Now he said, "Oh no, it was the Republican that was escalating things. It was the Republicans." That's what he was saying of Tennessee, and apparently he said the same thing about the elevator dust up too. But it sounds like this guy's got an anger problem. It really does. But hey, Harris made her little trip to Tennessee on Good Friday with these lawmakers. Not a single damn bit of attention was given to the police officers who heroically responded and actually acted and took out this militant trans activist. No tweets for them. Nothing for them. Just like nothing for East Palestine. Nothing for those areas. Nothing for those people. Just like nothing for the officers that Louisville. No tweets about them. I mean, just amazing. Amazing. But that's, you can tell where their priorities are.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So Al Jaffe, Mad Magazine's cartoonist, award-winning cartoonist, he was the guy who did the fold-in, and he had the snappy answers to stupid questions feature. He's passed away at age 102. He retired when he was 99 years old. You know, when you love your work, there you go. I mean, there's something to it. Also, pulling this up, the federal budget deficit. Yeah, it hit $1.1 trillion over 6 months, new CBO estimate. They said that the federal budget deficit has reached $1.1 trillion in the first 6 months of fiscal 2023. They estimated in a report that was released yesterday, the estimate is $430 billion higher than the shortfall recorded during the same period last year. Spending rose 13% from the previous six-month window. Revenues fell by 3%. Just nothing no good. Nothing no good. All right, ChatGPT. I watched the South Park episode where it was texting stories. The kids were using it to text stories to their replies to their girlfriends, so they didn't have to spend a lot of time giving these long answers. Apparently, ChatGPT may have helped somebody win the lottery. I find that, that's kind of funny. A man from Thailand says he used ChatGPT to generate numbers that helped him win the lottery. He went viral after sharing it online. He said he used the AI chatbot developed by OpenAI to generate numbers that he in turn then used to play the lottery and win. I don't know why that would have. I mean, how does that? I don't know how much he won. Actually, it doesn't really say how much he won. It gets into his. He won two. He won about $59. U.S. dollars. Never mind. I mean, it wasn't large. He said that ChatGPT told him not to get too obsessed with the method, saying that it was mostly luck and he should go out and get exercise. But he would input hypothetical questions as well as prior winning numbers as like the query, as the prompt. You know, people are hiring. That's like a six-figure job. Hiring to be a prompt, because not everyone has the skill to do it, to know what to input in order to get search results. It's wild. There's an urgent warning, by the way, to electric car owners, drivers. Thieves are targeting motors while they're charging. They're starting to steal electric car chargers that motorists plug in at home and to save going to the pay-as-you-go ports in public. So a lot of drivers, they hook up their cables from their car to a socket in the garage. But those are being stolen. And they said that the scrap value for materials in a cable actually can be worth a good chunk of change. So they're warning the UK. They're also warning the US. I mean, that's how bad things are. They're stealing this now. This is the thing that, you know, people are going at now. That's wild. Coming up, those documents. I mean, how did this leak? The Pentagon documents. We got all the latest on that and more. Stick with us.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you've found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
It's a brave whistleblower who brought us, came forward and told us about what was going on in the Richmond field office. They were looking, the FBI in the Richmond field office was looking to put sources in churches, have informants in Catholic parishes. That's what they were looking to do. Someone needs to give them a lesson in the First Amendment. This memorandum that they put together that we now have, this memorandum talks about doing just that. And it was signed off on by two senior analysts and the chief division counsel there.
I mean, where is this coming from? I first off, welcome back to the program. That's Jim Jordan, who chairs the House Subcommittee of Weaponization of Government. I mean, this really came out. It came out Holy Week. It came out, you know, the week before Easter. And why is there this like anti-Catholic bias within the FBI? That's what this memo was that he's discussing. This apparent attempt by the FBI to recruit an undercover employee to develop sources amongst clergy and leadership of the Catholic Church, and they gave it to Ray for his cooperation. NRO had a write-up on this. It was this memo. Violent extremist and radical traditionalist Catholic ideology. And when they brought Christopher Wray before the House Judiciary Committee, I mean, he acted like he was so shocked and surprised about all of this and was saying that, you know, it's so, I can't, you know, imagine this is so, you know, oh goodness. And then now, you know, looks like did they get an undercover employee to develop the authorities? So Jordan issued a subpoena demanding Ray come testify and give more information to Congress about the agency's intelligence gatherings about over targeting Catholic Americans. But what in the world? I mean, are they reacting to like some sort of like specific credit? I mean, it's one thing to act on like a credible tip, like any kind of credible information alluding to, you know, an event that may happen or something that may happen, you know, whatever. I mean, you can investigate based upon that, but that doesn't sound like this. I mean, it sounds like they're trying to find, like they have a charge in mind and they want to try to see if they can get some evidence for it. Is that what, I mean, that's, same agency that decided to call parents terrorists because they were speaking out at school board meetings. I know that there are some good agents, but no offense, I can't trust the agency. I can't, because of the leadership and the way that leadership and they have absolutely politicized this. And that's sad, because I don't want to have that thought. I don't want to think that about my government agencies. I don't. That's the thing that people don't understand about limited government people. It's not that we want to have a hostility, although I think you need it in order to have a healthy republic. The government should be in fear, have a healthy fear of being rejected by the people. And that's not me saying that. That's reams of things written by the founders. I don't want to think the worst of the people, either in elected office or in these agencies. I don't. I think that kind of, I know that I'm a cynic, but I think as far as human nature goes, that kind of goes against our nature a little bit. Like, we don't want to immediately assume the worst of people. But it's getting really difficult when you have example after example of agencies like this, like, you know, targeting parents who have had enough. I mean, you're really going to respond to parents who are passionate and concerned about their kids' well-being by classifying them as domestic terrorists because they raised their voice in a school board meeting? Seriously? Especially after seeing what some of these school boards and school districts have done to parents, like the family in Virginia whose daughter was raped in a school bathroom by a guy cosplaying as a girl, went on to assault another student. All the CRT, the DEI, all of the poison that they've been teaching, trying to push on kids in school. I mean, it's these inherently racist lessons where they sit here and they come at the perspective of presenting these lessons to kids that, oh, somehow you are better. And as a result, we have to tear down the whole country and rebuild it to offset that. I mean, that's like what the Klan would write. But I don't, is the agency salvageable? I don't know. And honestly, it is wild to have this as an issue considering everything that's happening foreign policy wise. I'm not even Catholic. And I don't know why the government would be spying on any faith, any religious demographic, any. Now, while all of this is happening, you know, you have the division here at home, which I think is purposeful. We had the story about the cognitive warfare from China, which I think that's what TikTok is. TikTok doesn't scare me in terms of what data they get. It doesn't scare me. It doesn't concern me in terms of what data they get, but it concerns me and what they do to people's minds. It is an entire psyop. And here you have Joe Biden hired an army of TikTok influencers, right, to help push his campaign. He's campaigning. He just hasn't officially declared. He doesn't have to. Everybody does this work for him. They all do it for him. But this cognitive battle, we shared some of this yesterday, the cognitive warfare, they've been doing it already, though. I mean, they've already been doing this. And now you have this story. Pull this up. The U.S. military is now going to hold the largest ever drills with the Philippines after China concluded its show of force, which included surrounding Taiwan. So now we're going to have military exercises involving about 17,000 troops. It's going to last for 7 days, ending at the end of April. It'll be 17,000 from both U.S. and Philippines. So that, I mean, even Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said, yeah, this is a big deal. As China continues to increase its hostility. One of the things that is important to note with this is that, you know, we talk about the imperialist desires of people like Vladimir Putin or those in the Kremlin, and how those imperialist desires are very much present in Beijing. And the difference is that they have a better chance of pulling it off than Russia does. And they don't really want to stop at Taiwan. Now, I'm not advocating for anything, but I'm saying there's a marked difference here. That a lot of people, you know, they sit here and say, well, if, you know, it's so important, et cetera, we have to, you know, in order to help Taiwan, we have to help Ukraine. But we haven't sent anything to Taiwan. Everything's been, everything goes to Ukraine. Which I don't buy that argument either. I think that's a dumb argument. So that is, I just keep thinking, that's why 2024, I think, is so incredibly important. It really is. I mean, I can't, you know, we have Republicans who are engaging in goofy primary fighting, and I just don't even care about that right now. I mean, we're looking at, we explained yesterday, if, heaven forbid, something were to happen, you know, and this cold conflict goes hot, I don't know how well we would do. Our manufacturing's been destroyed by policy. People are overtaxed. We got inflation. We're in a recession. You have division at home, division at school, division in the church, division on TV. There's no common ground anywhere. All common ground has been destroyed. The last vestiges of common ground have been destroyed by wokery. It's all purposeful. All purposeful to prime a people to be unable to fight and to stand united. Unity is the first line of defense. That's the first action you take. Then you have all of these documents emerging. Do you think, because they have they get into the sequence of training for Ukrainian units. They also discuss Five Eyes personnel. There's a lot. The Russian propaganda channels were photoshopping everything and reposting it, and it looks horrible. They don't even hire, I guess, decent Photoshop. I'm wondering, was this against the administration? It doesn't seem like a like-minded person from the administration would release this. Am I overanalyzing this? I mean, it doesn't seem that way. I don't know. It doesn't seem that way. But it's a huge story. It's like the biggest thing since what they said, the Snowden. Although I think Snowden's was worse. Just for the military, the aspect of, I don't like military, our soldiers' movements in Afghanistan being out there. That was a worrisome thing. Now, this story, I'll have more links for you in your prep emails about this. Apparently, the Washington Post said that a lot of these documents were prepared over the winter for Mark Milley, who's stepping down now. But you had to have, you know, security clearance. I mean, they had, like, for instance, the CIA intelligence update. It said Israel's Mossad supported protests against Netanyahu's Supreme Court reform scheme. They said that, which we knew, Ukrainian air defense is in peril if not reinforced by Western allies. We knew that. They get into CIA World Intelligence Review for policymakers. Beijing is likely to view attacks by Ukraine deep inside Russian territories, opportunity to cast NATO as aggressor. I mean, it goes on. I mean, it's not, a lot of it seems pretty kind of predictive. But I do think it shows the extent to which the United States is pushing its allies to, you know, step up a little bit, quit demanding that we do all this. All right, the Jim Jordan thing. We came in with Jim Jordan audio talking about the FBI going after the why they're going. I mean, going after the Catholic Church, which is wild. And I'll have that link included as well. I'm pulling up this story too, where you had this Mar-a-Lago raid, and the knowledge, whether how much of it did Joe. I mean, what did Joe Biden know? When did he know it? We never really got that answer from Karine Jean-Pierre, did we? I don't think we did. I remember her saying that, oh, he found out from the news. Wasn't that the, no one told Biden.
That's true.
That we, yeah, here it is, Politico. I wanted to make sure I had this. So this is the Politico piece. This is from 2022, August. No, there was no advance notice on Mar-a-Lago search, says White House. Biden had no advance notice. He learned about it through the press, said Karine Jean-Pierre. He wasn't briefed. He wasn't even aware of it. He had no idea. No one told him. Really, though? Because now it seems like that's not technically the case. They were saying, everyone was saying it was a surprise. So there's the National Archives Record Administration going over, you know, I was reading this piece that came from the American First Legal, which is some of the former Trump aides have formed this. There's a lot of information that kind of shows that, yeah, I mean, the DOJ confirmation of this request via the Biden White House. I mean, it's an email from Gary Stern, who's the National Archives General Counsel. And in an email that the American First Legal Group obtained, they said that the Justice Department via the Biden White House had made the special access request. So wait a minute. He didn't know, but that email says that he did. That's not the only one either. So, and that the, I mean, how? That was so, I mean, we knew that it was false when, you know, Karine Jean-Pierre was saying that he only found out through press reports. You're not going to get any kind of transparency from this administration.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
I was looking online yesterday at some of the old National Bank's website, and you can access their employee handbook, their premises, rules, etc. And it was, I mean, it was a gun-free zone. My friend John Lott this afternoon came out with a piece because they, I mean, you could even be fired if you weren't an employee and you carried. So, you know, the arguments that I hear, you know, that people constantly give, that, you know, it didn't help anything, clearly. I mean, that didn't, you know, the act of declaring something a X-free zone didn't stop X, because criminals don't pay attention to that. People who are hell-bent on murder don't pay attention to that. We're praying for the officer who is in surgery as well, and praying for that officer, the officer Nick Wilt. He's fighting for his life. All right, Today in Stupidity, Kane.
All right, it is Karine Jean-Pierre. Yesterday asked if the president is just avoiding questions from the press, and this was her response, and listen to the press's response.
So I'll say this. It is also unprecedented that a president takes as many shouted questions as this president has, and he has.
Okay. I'll tell you, almost every day.
Well, we'll certainly get the data and share that with all.
So shouted?
Even the press room doesn't believe what KJP
is saying. Yeah. That's not what that is. That's not what that is. Folks, that does it for us today. I hope you have a great evening. Sign up for the newsletter over at Substack, Chapter and Verse. Find us on YouTube, Facebook, like, and subscribe. Back with you behind the mic tomorrow.